Hey, lovelies. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that my newest design, the Gathered Chain Dress, is on pre-order right now. It features a gathered shoulder with an interchangeable chain detail, a super flattering bust line that accommodates all cup sizes, a softly flared sort of shift, but really not too bulky shape, and an asymmetrical hem. And to be honest, lovelies on Instagram have been totally losing their mind and swooning over the Gathered Chain Dress, and it has been really fun to just freak out over great fashion with you all. The dress is black and it comes with two chain options. So you get both. You can choose between yellow gold and rose gold depending on what you feel looks best on you, your mood, even the jewelry that you're planning on wearing it with. And when the chain is off, the whole thing is machine washable. So you just have options on top of options on top of options. The Gathered Chain Dress is available in sizes extra small through 3X, my usual inclusive size range. And that's equivalent to sizes 2 through 28. So the extra small is a 2-4, the small is a 6-8, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The pre-order is closing when I get to my desk first thing Wednesday morning, March 6th. The link to pre-order is in the show notes. If it still works or you still see it listed on impactfashionnyc.com, then you can still pre-order. Pre-ordering guarantees you get the size you want and allows you to shop stress-free without any launch day madness. When it does come in, stock is limited. I don't have that much space. And by pre-ordering, you're essentially reserving your piece in advance. You do not want to miss the pre-order. Pre-order the Gather Chain Dress and browse my whole collection of size-inclusive modest fashion by going to impactfashionnyc.com. Enjoy the show. From Impact Fashion, it's Be Impactful, a show about the women making a difference in their own corners of the world. I'm Rifki Itzkowitz, and on today's show, I sit down with a proudly Jewish jewelry designer to talk about her brand and mission. She shares why it was important to her to have Jewish-themed jewelry in her collection from the outset, her special connection to Holocaust survivors, and how her pieces got in the hands of celebrities. Rachie Schnee is really just a ball of sunshine and light, and I think that comes through in her gorgeous jewelry design. I love what she puts out. I think the pieces are just so pretty. And she's also someone who thinks deeply about her Jewishness, her business, and her art. I had such a wonderful time speaking with her.
I'm a middle child of three girls, so I was always, I feel like I would say I'm the classic middle child, very happy, very like kind of all over the place, free spirit, like beat you to your own drum, like didn't care about what anyone thought. Like I was very much like that. Like my older sister was totally different, like very aware, very, you know, following the rules. Like I was just the opposite all over. And I think I was just a very happy sunshine girl, which people still call me that. So I kind of, my like persona has kind of been consistent since I was born, which I guess is a good thing, or could not, you know, if you have to change, you're fine with changing. But I think I'm happy that I stuck with my happy sunshine blonde type of like persona that's just like optimistic and positive. I actually was a big part of my life growing up was I actually was overweight as a kid, and it continued like throughout my life. And I always struggled with that because my mom is a Latin Argentinian Barbie. She literally looks like a Barbie. And I think it was like growing up, it was a little tough because, you know, in that back then, I don't know how much it would be like now, but back then it was very much like a big deal to like, you know, be thin. And my grandparents are a Holocaust survivor. So it was always kind of just this, like, you have to eat everything on your plate and eat everything and don't leave any food behind and just keep eating, but then also be thin. So like, mm-hmm. It was just very like intense juxtaposition. And I have to say, even at my bat mitzvah, like I was pretty chubby, very cute. And I was the happiest girl ever. I was just like so confident, so, you know, like did not care about what anyone thought. And then when I was about 12 years old, I actually went to like weight loss camp for 2 years, two different camps, one in Florida, one in California. The first one was actually a religious Jewish camp. And which was very, it was great. It was fun. I loved both of them. I had the best time ever. And I feel like that really shaped who I am as a person, because I am like the least judgmental person when it comes to what anyone looks like on the out, like on the outside. I don't even like think about that, because I always am very sensitive to people who are a little bit different, or some people who are bullied or whatever it is. I've always been very sensitive to that because I went through it myself my whole life. And I actually gave a speech at my 30th birthday. It was a surprise birthday and I didn't know it was happening. And I got up and I was just talking and I ended up saying that I actually believe chubby kids are better people. Like that was the theme of the speech. I'm like, I really think that like, whether you are a little bit chubby or you're something different, or you have something that makes you like have to kind of grow up a little bit faster, because kids can be mean and you kind of have to just like learn how to be comfortable in your skin. I think that those kids end up having so much more character and they're such so much more empathetic. And, I don't know. I kind of had this whole theory and like my friends were laughing and they like, want to put it on the pillow for me. They're like, chubby kids are better people. Because I always say it and I'm like, it's so true. And whenever I see kids that like chubby little kids that I'm like, I just want to like hug them and be like, it's going to be okay. Like, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Like, life is great. You don't have, who cares? Like, that doesn't matter. So like, I also have been loving following your journey because I love seeing how you are size inclusive. And it's been like, it's so important and it's incredible. And yeah.
Well, thank you for that. That's very sweet. You mentioned that your mom was like this Latin Argentinian Barbie of a woman. Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in still South America or you were?
No, she's still Barbie. I grew up on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, but she grew up in Argentina and she also grew up as a chubby little girl. And then her mom also, I think it's obviously a generational thing that has to stop. So, but I mean, stop as in like forcing your kids to want to lose weight. But so anyway, yeah, I grew up on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. I grew up in a like modern Orthodox home, Jewish home. I went to yeshiva, I went to Ramaz growing up, and I ended up becoming more religious as I got older, in college and then afterwards. So that was like a whole nother journey.
I'm sure. I'm assuming you mentioned that your grandparents are Holocaust survivors. I'm assuming that your mom grew up in Argentina because that's the country that your grandparents could get to.
Yeah. Yeah. So my grandparents are all from Poland. They mm-hmm. all, that grandfather was actually in Auschwitz and then he survived, went to Israel. And then after he was in Israel for 10 years and then moved to Bolivia because he wanted to work. So there was no opportunity back then in Israel. Like the country just, you know, was starting and he was a brilliant businessman who never went to school. And I think that's actually where I get my hustle and my drive and my entrepreneurship is from him. Because he was just like doing anything and everything and like had just like had crazy guts and like didn't care to take a risk. And he was very much like that. So I feel like I have that from him. And my family always says that I'm like very much like him. And I was very, very close with him. And he moved to Bolivia and my grandmother had left Poland and then went to Bolivia and they met in Bolivia, got married there, had my aunt and then moved to Argentina, had my mom and she was raised there. And then there was kidnapping in Argentina in the 70s and it was just very corrupt. So they moved to London where she went to boarding school. Then they moved to Miami where she went to college. And then my grandfather stayed in Miami and then my mom came to New York to meet a husband.
As one does.
Exactly. And then my father's from New York, from Queens, which I think you're from.
Yes,
also.
Queens represent. And, wait, where in Queens is your father from?
Rego Park.
Oh, okay. So I'm in Kew Garden Hills. So that's like, okay, yeah, literally like right there.
He's still like very much a Queens boy. He loves going there. He goes food shopping there, you know.
Rego Park does have amazing groceries.
Yeah. And so his parents were also survivors and they went to Siberia. They were in Siberia in a slave labor camp, came to New York right after the war. They actually got married in a DP camp. And my uncle was born in a DP camp in Germany, came to New York. And then my dad grew up in New York. So it's very crazy and how they were actually set up. My parents, by his friend who was Jewish and her friend who was not Jewish. So that's
oh, really?
Very interesting. Yes. And I love hearing how people meet. It's just amazing because you like go backwards and you see like the hand of Hashem. Like you see the hand of God, Hashem, right. Whatever, in everything that happens. So it's like so interesting to see. But that's how it started. And we grew up in the city and I'm very much a city girl, even though right now in the past, since October 7th, I'm not a city girl and I'm not into it so much. So that's a whole nother story because I'm thinking of maybe relocating soon. So we'll
yeah, see. It's, I mean, listen, there's definitely a before and after October 7th for everyone, but I want to, you know, not get ahead of ourselves so much. Talk to me about getting into the jewelry business. Was that something
like
you?
I'm like acting like this is my therapy session. I'm like, oh yeah. So I'm thinking.
Girl,
of
you
doing-
have no idea how much therapy we do on this podcast. At this point, somebody actually told me that she feels like I should become a therapist, and I was like,
oh yeah, for sure.
No, absolutely not. If I would be the world's worst therapist because I would literally just be like, girl, we all have problems. Get your act together. Let's go. Get dressed. Come on, you can do it. Like that would be me as a therapist, which I'm sure is unethical in some way or another. But talk to me about the jewelry business. Was it something that always interested you? Was it something that you
never? Oh my gosh.
Give me that story.
So my mom did have a jewelry business growing up, but it was a very different time. Like she had it with my aunt who also grew up, we grew up in the same building. My mom and my mom and her sister are very close. So we grew up with my cousins upstairs, downstairs. And they would just have clients come over. They would sell very high-end, beautiful, amazing jewelry, but there was no website. There was no Instagram. There's no, you know, all of that. It's a totally different world these days. I'm sure the same thing in any business, fashion. Right. And so I never wanted to do it, but I was always around it. And I saw how people would just like buy things off of her and like, she would look so fabulous and they'd be like, okay, I want to buy your necklace. I want to buy this. So that it was very easy for her to do that. And then I actually went to University of Michigan my freshman year, became more religious with Chabad when I was there, transferred to NYU. And then when I was at NYU, I was doing trauma and therapy, so I thought I wanted to do something with therapy or I was focusing a lot actually on like third generation trauma, like Holocaust intergenerational mm-hmm. trauma. And then I'm just like, you know what, let me try and like go for a profession that's easy when you have kids, God willing, one day, and something that makes good money and whatever. So I was working towards becoming an OT, occupational therapist. And I actually got into Columbia OT school, was there 2 weeks. Day before they said that we had to dissect cadaver, which is the body, I was just like, not for me. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was going to be an occupational therapist, dropped out of Columbia after a few weeks, decided like completely pivoted, said, this isn't for me. Classic middle child, like I said before, free spirit. And I did a complete 180 and decided to actually go to culinary school. And I became a professional cake decorator. And I actually was selling kosher cakes. It just was like a fun thing. It started as a fun thing where I was making cakes and people actually started asking to like buy them for Shabbos or buy them for birthdays. And then I was like, oh, I really like this. Like I should actually learn more about it. So I went to Institute of Culinary Education at downtown and I became a professional cake decorator. So I was selling cakes and doing that from my parents' kitchen. And then at the same time, things kind of just like fell on my lap and I just ran with them. I think things fall on people's laps oftentimes, but it's a matter of just like if they're going to grab it or not, or if they're going to like really mm-hmm. notice it. So this, another thing fell on my lap where somebody, a family friend asked, her daughter was in private secular school and she hated her after school Hebrew program. So she wanted me to just like come over and teach her and just like have fun and whatever. And she would pay me like a tutor. So I was like, I would love to do that. I actually wanted to do that anyway, just like as a mitzvah, like just as a good thing to do. And I started tutoring her. I was teaching her like parsha and mitzvahs and for her bat mitzvah and Hebrew. And then one thing led to another and her friend wanted it and the other friend. So I ended up having like 15 students a week and I became like this at-home Hebrew school program thing, which also just like fell on my lap. And which is very interesting because I called it GEM, J-E-M, and my business card has a diamond on it.
Oh, wow.
And it was called Jewish Educational Mentors. And it's like, I still kept the business card. It's just crazy how it foreshadowed. I didn't even think about being in jewelry at all. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I was like, I might as well just get my master's in Jewish education because why not? So I was doing that at night. So I was like doing cake decorating, selling cakes, teaching kids, and then going to school at night. And I graduated from YU Azrieli in a master's in Jewish education, which even when I was doing that, I never really like woke up as a kid and was like, I want to be a teacher. So that kind of just happened. And I'm like, I don't know if this is really what I want to do, but I'm just going to like roll with it for now. And then the baking kind of got to a point where it's like either I have to open a place or like I can't do this from my parents' kitchen anymore. It was just crazy. So I, the same time, my sister, my older sister, Deborah, had just graduated from business school. And we kind of had this idea because we grew up in the business of jewelry, we knew how much things cost. Like we would see the cost of things. And then we would see like now the retail prices are just like astronomical. And we're like, you know, we want to make fine jewelry, real diamonds, more accessible, affordable. And we wanted to start a line that, you know, real jewelry for under $1,000. That was like our Warby Parker approach. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of set it all up, spent like a good amount of time preparing to launch the company. And last minute, she actually had a great job offer. So she took another job and she couldn't do both at the same time. So it ended up falling on me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to change the name. I had everything ready. I had the packaging. I had the website. I had the LLC. I had everything under a different name. And I decided literally 2 weeks before I launched to change it to my name, which is Rachie Schnee. And it was actually called GG and Snow, which is very hard to say now that I'm very happy that it's not the name. But GG is like what my mom is Gabriella and the grandchildren call her GG, and Snow is Schnee in Yiddish. So that was going to be the name of the company. And then last minute I changed it. And I guess that's the pivotal moment where it became more of like a lifestyle brand, because Rachie Schnee is like evolving to a lot of other things now. So I launched the company. It was pretty crazy because I had another Instagram account, Rachie Bakes, which was all my baking. And I had like a following on that account. And it was very gutsy to do this, but I feel like there are no real rules in running a business, as you know, and you kind of can just like do whatever you want and see how it plays out, especially in today's day and age. And I feel like any like normal professional business person would be like, oh, like you can't like just start something new on your previous other business account. But I didn't listen. So I woke up one day, September 24th, 2019, and I got on Instagram and I'm just like, you know what, guys, like this was a Rachie Bakes. I changed it to Rachie Schnee. I changed the name and I said, hey guys, like I'm not baking anymore. I just started a fine jewelry company and this is it. So I launched that. And I knew that when I launched the company, I needed to have the Mazel collection. So I had, you know, I have everything like tennis necklaces and flowers and hearts and like all the typical fashion, beautiful stuff. And I knew that I wanted to have a line of Jewish themed jewelry that was really fun and cool and funky, because up until then I really couldn't find a go-to place to have that. So, you know, like I would maybe have my grandmother's vintage piece or something that I thought was cool, but I couldn't find, you know, a hand chain with a Megan Zavid or hoops or the Mazel ring or all these things that like I soon created. And I wanted it to be something that people really, you know, would take their, let's say they have $1,000 to spend on jewelry for that year and they're picking something out. The fact that they are going to choose to wear Megan Zavid with diamonds says a lot. So I really wanted to like reframe how Jewish women shopped and maybe make them, you know, more inclined to be proud of who they are and pick something with the Megan Zavid or with a Chai. So that's kind of how it started.
So the Mazel collection was not something that evolved. It was always there from the very beginning.
Yeah. I had the Mazel collection from the very beginning. And it was like an ode to my grandparents who are survivors. And then also I'm named after my grandfather's sister, whose name was actually Rachel Schnee. And she was killed in Belzec when she was 6 years old. So it's almost, I talk about it on my website, just like the whole company in itself is like a living memorial to her and to the, you know, the victims and the survivors, and that we should take back the Megan Zavid, which is something that the Nazis stole from us to make us feel ashamed and not want to wear and be scared to wear, to something that we should be so proud to wear and not be scared. So that was from the beginning. The Mazel ring was the focal point of piece of the Mazel collection. And then, yeah. And then as the years went by, I added a bunch and designed like a lot of new pieces
from there. So this Mazel collection that so prominently features the Megan Zavid is, yeah, First of all, gorgeous. Like the pieces themselves are so pretty. And I don't know, I can't say that I've really thoroughly researched this, but I don't know that I have seen Like usually when we see Magen David pieces, they're like, they're cheaper stuff. Like they're not as nice. They're like, they're almost kitschy. And the idea of bringing this motif into such a beautiful high fashion place with real stones and beautiful layouts and the way that they're overlaid and everything is really, really special and really nice to, you know, like really special to have. What about the collection do you think has made it resonate so much? Because you have gotten such, first of all, just like a huge amount of press and also just such widespread acknowledgement, really, and adaptation of the Mazel collection. Why do you think it resonates so widely?
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for those kind words. Really, thank you. It's a work in progress, but why does it resonate? I think, first of all, it was not easy to get it to be cool. Like I had to work at Come On every single day and really post about it and really be excited about it and show how you can style it and look cool and fun and whatever. And I really put like my blood, sweat, and tears into that and really, really tried to, that it was like, it's almost like a mission for me. So it was like a mission driven collection. And I just, you know, I don't know, I guess because I'm so passionate about it. And really in the end of the day, the reason why I, aside from having like the symbolism to the Holocaust and to survivors and victims, I just wanted, I wanted it for myself. Like, you know, a lot of times like successful businesses start because you feel a need, you can't find a product or something. And you're like, you know what, I'm going to make it. If it doesn't work out, then at least I have this product that I made and it works for me. That's how I was. I'm like, if it doesn't work out, great. I'm going to make myself really beautiful, my Kentucky jewelry. And I think when somebody's so passionate about something and they love it so much, it really radiates. And the same thing with your Instagram account. Like when you're so passionate about your designs, you show from the beginning to the end, it makes people want it, you know, like, it's like you're watching it and you're seeing how beautiful it is and showing it on all these other people. And then you're like, oh my God, I want that too, you know? So I really worked very hard on that. And, it's very interesting because I was just on a different podcast talking about it yesterday. I never actually hired a PR firm or anyone. I actually never hired anyone. I had like interviewed and, you know, they asked for like astronomical prices. And a lot of times people are like, you don't even see the benefits to that. You don't even know like what's going to happen. So I didn't want to take the risk at the time. And it kind of, I have to say, like, I have like very strong emunah and bitachon, like faith and trust in God. And I feel like I saw a lot of crazy things happen, with like in a good way that it kind of just came to me. Like, you know, Deborah Messing messaged me on Instagram. I was like, you know, like all these people just started. Yeah, it was crazy. I was freaking out. I was actually in Israel, like in a hotel room, and it was like in the middle of the night for me. And I like look at my phone and I'm like, oh, I started like screaming. I was freaking out. And we became like actually good friends now, but which is fun because a lot of your clients do become friends, especially of course, like the ones that you're working with. And so that was, those things just started to happen slowly. And once one person's wearing it, like other people want it. And, you know, it's a lot of it is word of mouth. And it's been quite the roller coaster. It's been crazy. I think another big moment for me was when Israel hosted Miss Universe for the first time 2 years ago, which was a very big deal. And so, you know, every Miss Universe contestant from every country flew to Israel. And Israel, El Al reached out to me on behalf of the state of Israel and asked me if I would gift the previous Miss Universe, the Mazel ring, like on behalf of Israel, which was crazy. I was like, yeah, okay. So
sure.
It was nuts. That I was like freaking out from that. She landed in Israel and I went onto the plane and gifted her this ring that says Am Yisrael Chai in the back, which means like the nation of Israel lives. And for her to be wearing that, and she like quote unquote represents the universe, it was a very big deal for me. Like that was, I think, you know, it's like those, it's not so much for me, like the celebrities, it is very cool and whatever, like but it's like those moments where that was a very pivotal point just because of like the symbolism of that. I'm very much into those things. I'm not so starstruck. Like for me, having Dr. Edith Eva Egger, who's a very incredible, unbelievable survivor who wrote the book, The Choice and The Gift. I don't know if you know her. She's like incredible. Everyone has to read the book, The Choice. For her to have a mazel piece was like more important for me than for Gal Gadot. You know, like I just like, right. I like really reframes my views of like people in general. And obviously having Gal Gadot was the coolest thing ever, but I was so passionate and like emotional for someone like her. And even for, you know, I was in Israel on a mission trip a few months ago, in November or December. And, we went to, see the survivors of Kfar Aza, and you know, there were a few women on the trip wearing my pieces, and, we decided to give necklaces to two of the women that were speaking to us, and like just giving them those necklaces and them crying and being an emotional and like having this like sisterhood bond over these pieces of jewelry that represent who we are. Like that to me was so much more impactful and powerful than the celebrities. So it's really interesting how things unfold and how a piece of jewelry and like, you know, just diamonds and gold, we can like take something physical and elevate it into something so much more than that.
Yeah, it's, I think that also when it comes to, there's a certain heirloom quality about jewelry that really gives it this eternalness, you know, like jewelry gets passed down through families in a way that clothing doesn't. Do you know what I mean? Because it, you know, fabric will eventually over time show wear and tear and those kinds of things in a way that stones just don't. And that makes it that much more special.
It's so true. I actually never thought of that. Like I do have some pieces from my grandmother's like fabulous clothing, but first of all, like the fit and, you know, the style and but like, it is so special to have like a coat or a scarf, anything, but it's so true to have a piece of jewelry, which also is transcends, you know, every generation. Cause you know, especially if it's a mazel piece, it's very cool to have that and say, oh, this was my grandmother's and this was, you know, she was wearing this Magen David in the 1940s and now I'm wearing it. Like, it's a very cool feeling to have. And I also love how with my business, I see how a grandmother, I just actually had the unbelievable, like a Holocaust survivor in Montreal for Hanukkah just now, she ordered 48 mazel bracelets for all of her children and grandchildren. And it was so emotional and like incredible, you know, wow. So
so special to like, especially with her story and how many bracelets that is. Right.
And it was like, it was crazy. And it was like a last minute thing. I had to like run around like a chicken with no head to try and make cause it was like a week before Hanukkah and I already had a ton of people that I had to fulfill the orders and I had to like make it happen really fast. Cause I was like, I need her to have it. And she wants to give it to everyone at this big Hanukkah party that she does every year. And I'm like, this has to happen. So, but it was so special. And yeah, for me, I'm a very spiritual, connected, like deep person. And I like to talk about these types of things. And I like to I cry from things like this. And I, you know, I will do anything for a survivor, especially. I have a lot of like, neshama connection to them. And so, yeah, when she asked for that, I was like, yeah, let's do it. Like, we got to do it.
Let's make that happen. Right. Of course. You mentioned very early on in our conversation that, you know, that you've been having different feelings towards the city since October 7th. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit more about that. How has your life changed? You know, and to a certain extent, all of our lives have changed, but what's been your story in that?
So it's so interesting because I was always such a city girl. I'm like, I love the city. I'm never leaving the city. It's the best place ever, blah, blah, blah. And then October 7th happened and well, I would say a lot, the city has definitely changed since COVID for sure. So like things, you know, kind of went downhill and it's a little bit not as safe to walk around at night. And like, you know, there's just crazy people and doing crazy things. But since October 7th, I feel like I was having a lot of Holocaust trauma, like, you know, like subconscious Holocaust trauma. Like I was always a very big educator in Holocaust studies. I've been the chairwoman of Yad Vashem Young Leaders. And I used to teach Holocaust at the museum downtown at the Museum of Jewish Heritage. It's a big part of my life. So I was never like scared. I would watch every Holocaust movie, read every book, talk about it constantly, meet every survivor. It's a huge part of my life. And I've been to Poland many, many times. And when October 7th happened, and then we saw the posters on the street and like them being ripped down and seeing the craziness on social media, it really gave me extreme anxiety that I didn't think was going to happen. You know, like it's really crazy to see how things can shift so quickly and, you know, people show their true colors. And the fact that I walk in front of my building and I see a posters like ripped down as if they were clawed by animals makes me like have this like crazy anxiety from the inside out, and just makes me like, oh my gosh, like I don't want to be here. Like, this is like, what's happening? Like, this is, it feels like Nazi Germany, you know, like there's people, if you have a flag outside, an Israeli flag, like it's going to be ripped down, like in New York, you know, like all these crazy things that I never really thought of before. None of us really did. And then looking visibly Jewish, I mean, I only wear, I dress modestly, but again, even as women, like when we dress modestly, it doesn't necessarily mean we're Jewish, but I also am covered in magenta beads. So it's definitely been, it's like an almost like an inner turmoil thing that I'm going through myself, because I'm such a proud Jew and my whole thing is that I'm a proud Jew and everybody should be a proud Jew. But then like when you actually feel unsafe, it is definitely scary. So yeah, it's like, it's an interesting thing and I'm still working through it and it's still an everyday, you know, situation. And then I was in Miami a few weeks ago for yeshiva break and it was so nice and refreshing to be somewhere where you could be a proud Jew and not feel unsafe. And you know, there's Israeli flags everywhere and it's just a different vibe. And for some reason, the city just feels like this place that has completely turned dark. And everyone who I talk to, especially like I have some showroom days where people come up and shop and these women are coming like desperate to buy magenta beads. They feel like this need and want and have to have it. And they never worn it. And all of a sudden they need to have it, but they're all saying the same thing that, you know, they're taking their kids out of the schools that they were in, or they're not like going to the same gyms, or they're not doing the same things that they were doing before because they see how there's this shift of the people around them. So it's really, I don't know what you're feeling. Like, do you feel that?
I do. It's like, as you're talking, I'm just thinking of like all of the ways that I've had similar feelings. I also, my Holocaust trauma manifests a little bit differently. On my mother's side, my grandparents are not survivors, but my great grandfather is, and he never spoke about the war. So like, it wasn't like, it was something that he specifically did not talk about. It actually was only when my great grandmother died and my mother and her siblings together with her, with like her mother and uncle were cleaning out the house that they found troves of documents and train tickets and like basically the paper trail that was him getting out. And that was a whole crazy story. And then on my father's side, both my grandparents are survivors there. And my father is actually the only child of two survivors. My grandfather, who died before I was born, but he survived Auschwitz, And my grandmother, lost a brother in Auschwitz and she was never in a camp. She with her parents was like running away in forests and things like that. You know, the stories that we all have and the way that they, my grandmother, who I was very close with and similar way that you were saying how like you feel like you get your hustle from your grandfather. I get it from this grandmother. Absolutely. She's the one who taught me to sew. We were really close and they were very careful that like, all of the pictures of my father as a child, he's not wearing a yarmulke. And his legal name is a very English name. And like always having up-to-date passports and that kind of thing. Like for them, this idea of like showing Jewish pride felt really dangerous and they didn't do it. And I now am really torn about that because there's definitely at the same, like I'm torn between how practical I want to be. Like I think my grandparents, when they made sure that there were no pictures of themselves, like where they could be identified as Jewish, like no proof, quote unquote, I think that they were being really smart when they did that. And I totally understand why they did that considering their experiences. And also I don't like the idea of doing that, you know, for me and for my family, I don't, that it also, it feels so unfair because I'm generally aware of what's going on in the world. I probably swing a little bit more left wing than people think I do. And when I see other groups that are like Black people have their, you know, their Black Lives Matter and their pride. And there's like Hispanic pride and there's like, even like just gay pride or like all these are like all these people who get to be out and proud and do what they do and do it out loud. And doing that as a Jewish person feels irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And I hate that that's the way that anxiety manifests for me. And so, and it's really a back and forth. I don't know, like, there's, it's weird. I don't know. I don't know that there really is an answer. And I totally hear how people are like, no, we need to be even prouder now. We need to show it more and all of that. And I agree with that intellectually and emotionally. It's very difficult. Like, listen, I'm Jewish and on the internet. That's not a secret. And especially around when the war broke out, there was definitely a part of me that was like, is it so smart that I'm Jewish and on the internet? Like, is that, does that seem like the right place for me to be right now? And I've always been someone who I don't share my personal life at all. And only me and my husband are, have ever been posted online, and no child of mine will ever be posted on the internet or on my page or anything like that. And I was definitely feeling really grateful for making that decision, and
Right.
for, for the fact that people couldn't recognize, and on all of that. That felt right. But it's hard. It's tricky. Like, I hear both sides of it. And I, as much as like I want to be on that, like, yes, we need to be as proud as possible, I still think that like I can't bring myself to do it. Which is more of a comment on me than it is on, on the idea of it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it totally makes sense. And I think everyone's going through the same dialogue in their head. And then you feel guilty that you're even thinking that. And then it's like it's back and forth constantly. But, I have to say, just statistically, because what from my sales, just seeing the craziness of like people wanting the Mazel jewelry, there was maybe one person that I can remember that came to buy jewelry that was just like, oh no, I don't want to wear that now. Out of thousands that came to that, not maybe came in person, but all ordered that wanted my Gen Zevi jewelry. So it's like it's so refreshing and it's so beautiful to see that people feel so they got to a point. It got to a point in this world, I think, that people are so helpless. I'm not gonna say hopeless, but they're helpless to the point where they're like, I just want to wear it because I don't care because I want everyone to know that I'm Jewish, I mean, also like it's a certain situations. Like obviously if I'm like traveling or if I'm around people that I kind of can sense that they might not like me, then I won't be like putting it in their face, But it's yeah, I don't know. Like this is how I think the way my brain is working right now is it's how I think. Obviously nobody should put their lives in danger, but at the same time, we also, again, like we cannot hide. We really have to try not to be scared to be proud. And I think that's a lot of like the reason why assimilation happened after the war was because of that. Like you said, your grandparents, obviously they didn't assimilate, but a lot of people did because they were so terrified to be Jewish and they just wanted to be like everyone else. So I'm very much the type to not want to be like everyone else. And that's why I created the Mazel collection, like another reason just to stand out and be proud. So yeah, this is a constant battle. I think we're in a time where, hasn't happened since the Holocaust. So pre-Holocaust.
And that's what's so scary about it, right?
Yes, everyone's just like in this shock factor, like they don't know what's happening. And I know this sounds crazy, but to me, being in a place like Miami, I don't know if you've been recently, you really feel it's a different world. Like it's crazy to think that you could be in the same country and there are more Jews in New York than there are in Florida. And I mean, maybe not anymore because everyone's moving, but it's really like crazy how, Jews are so proud in New York and we're such a huge, community, and it still feels very eerie.
So, is a move to Miami in your future?
Very much so. But not only for that, just because for other reasons too. But I don't know, we'll see like maybe it's just spending some time there. But it does feel it I think everyone that was walking around there was kind of just like, why are we all here? Like this is so nice. I mean, also Israel. Like I was in Israel and I very much was I do want to move to Israel and I would move to Israel. So I think it's also just a matter of like time and situation, but those are very much options. Yes.
Do you really see Aliyah as a serious, Aliyah is moving to Israel. Do you really see that as like a serious option, a serious way that like a
Yeah.
something that would happen in your life?
Yeah. My sister moved there. So my sister lives there and is raising her family there. She's younger than me. And so I spend a lot of time there and I think I would say if I didn't have this, the companies that I'm running, I would for sure be there right now, but it's a little harder to do that. But I don't want to make that a reason not to do that also at the same time. So it definitely is in the cards at some point. Like I have, like I want, it's hard for me to like, let's say I'm not married right now, and it's hard for me to be with, like date someone who doesn't see that. So yeah.
It needs to be an option for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that. It's so interesting because I am not, I don't see myself ever making Aliyah. I just don't see that as something that makes sense for me, makes sense for my family. And at the same time, all, like, especially in the last couple of months, all the people being like, you know what the safest place for the Jews are, you know, where we have an army and where we can protect ourselves. And yes, there's terrible things that happen there, but that's probably the safest place for Jews. And I'm like, there's, as much as I don't ever see a situation where I would make Aliyah, I kind of think they're right. More than kind of, I think they're right.
Yep. 100%. Like, you know, everyone says like, we can pretend all we want and pretend like people love us and accept us. And some people do, but the fact that we are, the fact that like, I could be in an elevator with someone and I'm wearing all my mazel jewelry. And if somebody, a complete stranger says to me like, oh, I love your necklace, I almost want to hug them. I'm like, thank you so much. Like, thank you for accepting me. Like, thank you for like, that's not normal. You know, like, it's just not normal that like, we are so grateful to someone who doesn't want to kill us, you know? So
the bar is so low.
It's so low and it's terrifyingly low. Like, it's just crazy. And yeah, when I was in Israel just now, I was in shul Friday night and there were a siren went off in Jerusalem. And I didn't even hear it, honestly. I didn't even know what happened. And I was davening and they were singing and it was amazing. And then the siren went off and people were kind of like sticking their heads outside. And then I didn't even know what was happening. And then I went back to my sister's apartment with like my whole family. And they're like, oh, like we were in the bomb shelter. Did you like, what did you do? I'm like, I had no idea. Like, what? And like, that's a crazy life to live, obviously, but I would choose that. But being around people who like love and accept me and protect me and fight for me than being here where you feel completely alone. So, and also just like, I really had to take a break from social media for a little bit. And it was really getting to me. And I think the worst thing is reading comments on certain things. And
don't
I
do that.
And you know, you do it anyway, because like, it's like that thing where you have to do, but then you're so feel stupid for doing it.
Is there something that you see, like, is there a uniting factor, I guess, aside from being Jewish, that you see among the women who like are gravitating towards the mazel collection?
No, literally. The fact that they're Jewish is the only common thread, and that they are every age, like affiliation, background, like continent, like it's just crazy. I've had a few non-Jews actually write like beautiful messages to me and wanting to support and buy because they like love what I do, and that was amazing. But aside from that, we've shipped literally everywhere, like everywhere from, we've shipped to Germany, to like Scotland, Spain, France, London, England, Switzerland, like everywhere. I mean, it's unbelievable. Australia is a big one. And
is Australia really a big one for you? I just recently got my first order from Australia and I was like, go freaking figure.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. I have a lot of clients in Australia.
And, I'm actually, when I say that, like I recently shipped to Australia, I mean that like that package is still in transit now and I have been tracking it every single day.
So just be, I know, like, it's always very,
where
scary.
Is it? Where is it? She ordered the Am Yisrael Chai sweatshirt, which like makes sense that that's the product that like has the most like reach and everything. Yeah. And I'm just like, where's the sweatshirt? It got to Melbourne this morning. It's very exciting. Oh, it has to get to Tasmania. I don't know where that is or where it is in relation to Melbourne, but it definitely got there. So
yeah, it's amazing.
I hope you get your sweatshirt soon. By the time this airs, you better have gotten that sweatshirt.
It's such a cool thing. I remember like the first time I shipped anything, I was just like, oh my God, how does this work? How is this going to happen? Like, it was so crazy, you know? But even international. So, oh, in Israel, I have so many clients in Israel, of course, but yeah, it's so crazy and it's so fun. And I love seeing where they are, especially like, I'm sure you also like, it's so fun to see the different states they live in and the places. And like when I print the labels, I read the place, the shipping like address. Same. And it's so cool. And then it's just like, it's amazing to like, for people, I see people on the street or wherever I'm traveling, anywhere I am, and they come up to me or they show, and I see it like from the corner of my eye, I see one of my pieces. It's definitely a very fulfilling feeling. But I also, at the same time, I'm sure maybe you feel this too, but I also feel like I don't really give the full credit to myself. Like I'm kind of just like, oh yeah, like I'm kind of the messenger, and like God gave me this gift and I did it, and you know, everything's coming from Him, and I feel so grateful that I could be the messenger. But I don't really like take, I'm not like, oh my God, it's all me, and like it's all because of me. Like I don't feel like that at all. I'm very much like, oh, like I am so grateful that I have the opportunity to do something like this, and like it's really not for me.
Yeah, I have a similar type of feeling in that there have been so many times, especially early on, where I was so close to needing to shut down for whatever reason, because, you know, when you have a product-based business, it's just cash intensive and getting it off the ground and everything like that. And then like the exact right number of orders would come in at the last minute, or like a custom client would show up that needed something that like totally put me in the black for 3 months or something like that. And that has happened too many times for me to be like, yes, it has been my business acumen and smart way of thinking that has created the company that you see today. Like that would just be so delusional.
Yep. I literally was just talking about this with someone. They said that people in business see the hand of God like more than anyone else. Cause you're just like, oh my gosh, like this should not have happened. And this just happened. And there's no reason or sense for it. So it's so true. It's so true.
I could not agree more. This has been so lovely. And I wish that we could go on for another hour, but unfortunately,
how long has it been?
It's been like 45 minutes.
Oh my gosh. No way. I can talk forever.
Yeah. If somebody wants to learn more about you, get their hands on the mazel pieces, you know, express their Jewishness in all of the prettiest ways, where are they going?
Okay. Reichishnei.com, Reichishnei on Instagram, and then thehealerscollection.com or thehealerscollection on Instagram. We're also sold at Nordstrom, and we're coming out with watches too. So that's really exciting.
Love it. We have watches.
We're coming out with more watches.
Oh, yeah. Yay for watches. I'm going to link all of that in the show notes so that people can definitely check that out. Take a look at the collection. The pieces are beautiful. Totally Thank gorgeous. One last thing I want to ask you, Reichi. Where in your life do you think you've made the most impact?
I would say the Mazel Collection.
I agree. I hear it. Thank you so much.
Mazel Collection in the outer sphere and then in my inner sphere. I just like to be a light and to just be happy and positive and try to like spread, you know, Judaism in my own sphere too. So I think it works in both ways. Like I'm sure with you too, like just, you know, whatever you're creating, you first and foremost want your inner sphere to like love it and be proud. And then obviously it extends to everything else out there.
Yeah, so. 100%. Thank you so much for coming out today, Reichi. I really appreciate
Thank you.
It. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about Reichi, her links are in the show notes. On last week's episode, I spoke with naming expert Alexandra Watkins about what makes a good name. Listen to it wherever you're hearing this one. The Be Impactful podcast is a project of Impact Fashion, the clothing line I created because I believe that we are all deserving of the beautiful things life has to offer. See my modest designs that are available in sizes 2 through 28 by going to impactfashionnyc.com. Access all of that by swiping up on the cover art. There are currently 19 people listed by Ora Agunot as a recalcitrant party. View their names, photos, locations, and details of their cases by visiting getora.org/recalcitrant-parties. The episode art was designed by Michelle Moses, original music composed by Nissan Fetman. This episode was produced and hosted by me, Rifki Itzwitz. Catch me on all the socials at impact.fashion.nyc. As always, here's to making an impact together. You've spent quite a bit of time listening to me, and now it's my turn to listen to you. By just answering a few questions in a short listener survey, you can share feedback about show content you'd like to see in the future and help me shape Be Impactful into the best showcase of female voices out there. Even better, once you've completed the survey, you'll receive an exclusive code to shop at impactfashionnyc.com as my thanks. The survey is short and sweet and will help me keep bringing you content you love. Just go to impactfashionnyc.com/survey. Again, that's impactfashionnyc.com/survey. And thank you so much in advance.